Hey everyone, I'm Matt.
And I'm Steven.
And you're listening to
Code Talk with Matt and Steven,
where we sit around chatting about code and stuff.
This is episode number 3. Today we're talking about visual debt and too strict or not too strict type of code.
So sit back and enjoy.
Visual debt. So that's kind of a term going around right now, right? It's in fact, this actually might be our first semi-topical podcast. It's about two week and a half late, you know, but I think that's still fresh enough that we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of been going around the PHP world, at least. And it kind of all got kickstarted by a video on Laracast by Jeffrey Way, who I'm sure most of the people in the PHP community know and respect, which I definitely know and respect. I mean, I owe a lot of my career to his teachings way back when he was one of the editors and contributors to Tuts Plus, and then followed him on throughout his career into his own, you know, endeavors with Laracast. So I definitely respect him, and I think he's a, you know, brilliant developer, excellent teacher. So he's got this video out where he talks about visual debt, and meaning visual debt in your code adding all these elements in, like you know, the public private in front of your methods and protect in front of your properties, you know, adding the type hints, the scalar type hints, you know, the return types, interfaces, things like that. Basically, using all the different pieces of a language. Because it's there, and he's saying a lot of times you can, or sometimes, you know, you can break it down and you can come back and you can pick these things apart. You know, you don't really need them. And I kind of actually took issue with that. I kind of, you know, engaged in a conversation with him on Twitter. He ended up having to go on Reddit and kind of defend himself. And so the video, the whole purpose of this video is it's he's got a new series out where they're just, what, 3 to 5 minutes long, I think. And he's purposely setting this limit here. So he's trying to get a lot said and a lot done in these time limits. But at the very end of the video, you know, he drives the point home of question everything. And for me, I think that's too short of a video to kind of throw something like this out there and let your point be the ending of it, the question everything. So he actually had to take to Reddit to defend himself. And it was, you know, kind of a long post. And I found it kind of comical that, you know, he got so much flack with this 3 or 5 minute thing, but ended up having to have this huge, if he had just started out with or done a 10 minute video and explained kind of what he was saying is why he was saying these things. Then, you know, I think he spent more time defending himself after the fact than it would have taken to do it up front and do a slightly longer video. But anyways, Matt, you've watched the video. You've read some of these rebuttals and some of the rebukes. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the whole thing.
Yeah, I did. And you know, the whole question everything wasn't the only thing he said. I mean, throughout the video, he was like, multiple times he said, you know, decide whether this is something that that your team needs, that your app needs, you know. And it wasn't, to me, it wasn't, he was saying that, yeah, we need to drop all these things because they're stupid or we don't need them. But though, I mean, you know, me personally, I question, well, why would you not want to, you know, a return type on that to say it's a Boolean or, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, so to me, I think the example was probably not a good one. I think the message was, hey, if you don't need an interface, I think there was just such a much broader topic. And like you said, it definitely needed more time because, you know, I think what he was trying to get at is that there's a lot of developers out there that I see a lot of code where they write interfaces for everything. And you're like, why would you write an interface for every method that you're putting in, you know, in a class, you know, and then you're not even reusing that interface? You know, it just doesn't make sense. So, I mean, there's a lot of developers out there that do that kind of stuff. And I think that's what the message was supposed to be. And I understand how people are like, whoa, you know, I love this stuff. And me personally, I actually do. I'm actually starting to use return types and type hints and all that kind of stuff in my code. And I absolutely love it. it makes sense in what I'm doing. I write a lot of generic code. I mean, you know, things that that's meant to be implemented multiple times throughout the application. So interfaces and things like that are important. So I see its usefulness. I probably wouldn't use a return type in a controller, you know? So I guess I'm really not answering your question though. I'm just giving my opinion. To me personally, okay, so my thought on this is that just reading through the Reddit, you know, watching the video, reading through all the Reddit threads and things like that, I felt like, yeah, Jeffrey probably should even come out with another video on top of it, just a 10 minutes long that was more in depth and, you know, explained it more, what he was actually thinking. But I also think that, you know, again, you're giving you give the PHP community an opportunity to give their opinion on something. Everybody's got a different opinion on it. So, you know, there's a lot of jerks out there that they're just rude, you know? So I never saw where Jeffrey Way was like, you know, defending himself in a bad way. Do you know what I mean? Like he was very professional throughout the whole thing.
He really was. I mean, he was attacked left and right in every possible way. He was questioned respectfully, to which I thought, you know, at least my comments that I made, I interacted with him were, you know, very respectful. At least it came from a place of respect. But yeah, he was attacked, you know, and I thought he handled himself very professionally. And in fact, I felt bad for the guy, you know, at the end, because I saw a lot of the things. I'm like, man, people can really be negative. I've said before, my favorite part of PHP is the community. My least favorite part, it's also the community.
Yeah.
But especially, right, the internet, right? I mean, and you're talking about everybody's got an opinion. Opinions are like assholes, right? Everybody's got one. And some people just are assholes. And Jeffrey, if you ever happen to hear this, if I came across as an asshole, I apologize, because I really owe you a lot and I respect the hell out of you.
Yeah, I'd have to say Jeffrey has done, you know, Laravel, you know what Taylor has done, and, you know, Jeffrey and his training series on Laracast and the forum, and just the amount of information that's out there, and it's just amazing now. Like, I mean, we really did not have this. You know, when I was getting started, we had Linda. And that was it. Yeah. You know, so, and I've even actually watched a lot of Laracast tutorials just throughout my career, just, you know, like, you know, just to see somebody else's opinion. And I think that's important, is that, you know, I think Jeffrey's an amazing teacher. He has a great way of, you know, really breaking things down so that you understand them and can implement them or make your decision whether to implement, you know, what he's trying to show you. So I think he's done quite a bit for our community. And, I think he should be treated with much more respect than what our fellow developers, you know, how they treated him. So
absolutely. And he's got an amazing voice. Mm-hmm. When I used to have a subscription to Laracast, I used to just sometimes throw his videos on and it would help me concentrate. It was kind of like this very soothing, relaxing voice that helped me get into the zone.
I know. I think he picked the perfect career, because, yeah,
he's definitely
good at it. I would never be able to do that. So,
and, you know, like you said, he's given so much of himself to this community and to the worldwide, you know, without really asking anything in return. And he's been really great to us, to our community locally, Upstate PHP. I mean, for, I think, about a year and a half, Laracast was a sponsor, you know, and every month they gave us an extended trial, a 3-month trial, to be able to raffle off to members of our community. And so there are a lot of people in the Upstate of South Carolina here that owe a tremendous debt to him as well, because they've gotten those free trials. They found out what Laracast is. They found out what Laravel is. They've, you know, grown in their careers with the language and as developers, thanks to his generosity. So the whole idea of visual debt, I disagreed on. Now, the idea of too many interfaces, that to me, it's just, it's not visual debt. That's just clutter. Could be visual debt. But in fact, it's funny. We at work, we had this whole topic of discussion at the PHP team. We have every month we have a PHP guild meeting where we kind of get together and talk about what we want to do as a company and, you know, developers. And I brought this up and we talked about visual debt. But what's funny to me is a lot of us agreed that, you know, and we agree as a team that your code, when it comes in, it has to have return types. It has to have type hints where, you know, where it can. You know, it's got to follow PSR2 standards. In fact, we just adopted the unofficial or unaccepted still in draft PSR12, which is extended style guide. So that takes into account PHP 7 and 7.1 mm-hmm. features, you know, and it gives a definition to those styles. So we're really trying to adopt these standards, and you have to, though, especially in a large application. Just because you can't be going around knowing that, you know, even the debate of should I declare public, you know, if it's, you know, inferred. I think yes, for me personally, because I don't want to have to know that PHP defaults to public. I want to be able to read it, you know,
yeah, and just, I agree.
So I think there's, I want to be very explicit with my code. I want you to,
yeah.
I want it to be self-documenting. But one of the things I do chuckle about is, you mentioned so many interfaces. Is we use, whenever we have entities, we have DAOs that we use with Doctrine, but every DAO has a has an interface, and then it has the Doctrine implementation. It's like we've never not used Doctrine. We're never not going to use Doctrine. So it's just kind of comical, at least on that side note, that we have at Help Scout, every DAO has an interface and a Doctrine implementation, but you know, it never has, and that probably never will be switched out. I guess, but it could be.
Well, yeah.
But at this point, it would be a huge undertaking.
But wouldn't it make sense to have a more of a global interface for all your DAOs that makes sense than to have one for each individual?
Well, we do have an abstract DAO that they all extend because it gives them some shared functionality. But no, yeah, it's there. You know, and it is nice though, because we've been starting to implement a container. We've been pulling in the Leagues container package into our system and slowly adopting it system wide. And so now we have a service provider that allows us to, based on our naming conventions, the conventions with it, our DAOs, we are able to type in and constructor inject, dependency inject the interfaces mm-hmm. and their concretes based on our naming conventions. So that's nice. That is nice. In case we ever do it, our code is starting to migrate that way. So it wouldn't be a huge undertaking, but that's the only thing I would agree in our system. That's kind of a visual debt, but for me, it's PHP. It's all backend language, right? It's not like JavaScript where every byte counts, you know, in space across the pipe. So, and I think let your code be very explicit as possible. And so I don't see things like that as visual debt. In fact, I see removing pieces that you call visual debt as creating more technical debt. You know, a lot of these rebuttal arguments, you know, and links that we'll post in the show notes here that kind of question Jeffrey's post about this and kind of argue the other point of it is a lot of their points, the counterpoints to Jeffrey's are you're creating technical debt for, you know, or you're programming for the developer after you. But I always program for me after me because, you know, honestly, in 1 week from now, I can look back and be like, what the hell does that mean if I didn't comment it?
Yeah.
And then it's going to take me 30 minutes to go through the rabbit hole again and try to figure out what's going on, right?
Yep, I agree. So, yeah.
Commenting, you know, and using the features of the language, I think make a safer, more maintainable system.
And I agree with you in that case as well. You know, so I write a lot of code that other developers implement. So I find the use of that, you know, use of return types and type hints and all that just amazingly, like, I don't know what's the word. It helps so much. And one, for my own code, when I have to go back and make changes, but also, you know, when I'm expecting a class in something or an interface or, you know what I mean? Or, you know, an implementation of something in my code, I can make sure that the person that's implementing my code is actually you know, my code's going to know exactly what it's getting and it's going to be able to do the job based on how it was tested and how it was written. And for the other developer, then it makes sense to them. I'm saying, you know, put these things in there. You should return this. And it's going to work. I mean, to me, it's like, it's documentation. It's like, this is how you use this. You know, if you do this, then it's going to work. Right. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a kind of a, you know, been our argument at work internally is, and that was why I really looked forward to PHP 7 coming along with the scalar type hints and the return types and all of that is, you know, I want to know. I want to be safe in my code. you know, I don't want to, and here's, and actually, I think those actually eliminate visual debt. I'll give you an example here, because a lot of our legacy stuff and with Doctrine is, whenever we, with Doctrine, I think by default, maybe it's just the way we've got it set up. But anyways, a lot of our entities and our DAOs will return either a collection, the entity, or false. And so we have a lot of visual debt built up in the system where we're checking if entity or if collection, then do something on it, right? We can't actually, we don't catch exceptions because something wasn't found, or like if it's a collection, we have to know whether was it a collection or was it false. You know, we're not checking to always know that it's a collection instance or an array or something like that. And so I like the idea of these types coming along because it forces us to rewrite the code and actually get rid of a lot of those conditional checks. Yeah. So our code becomes cleaner, more maintainable.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Yeah. It's actually since my switch to PHP 7.1 and actually starting to use those, it's been amazing. So I enjoyed a lot and I'm so glad they're there. You know, and I can see, you know, on the other side of things, you know, if it gets to the point where I'm looking at my code and I'm like, oh man, this is way too much, which I don't see it happening right now. But then that's the opportunity to start removing some things, you know? So I see the, you know, where he's talking about, there's a lot of times where I think just in everything you do, you're going to want to go back through your code and you're, just like you said, you're going to clean it up. And that might be the time where you're like, well, there might be an instance where you might need to return more than one thing. So you're not going to actually do a return type on it. You know, it's just going to be mixed or whatever. So I think it's part of the refactoring process. And I just think, I don't know, going back to that video, I just think it was too short. There wasn't enough like context there to say, you know, this is a situation, maybe this is old code and, or, you know, that kind of thing. There wasn't enough like, well, you should use it here, but not here. Or this is a reason why you might not want to use it here. I don't know.
Yeah. And, probably good that we're recording a little late, a little delayed on this topic, because I was able to kind of – I had a knee-jerk reaction, which I stand by my initial reaction. Well, I'll explain it in a second, but you know, I was very kind of like, no, whatever. But now kind of after having read both sides of the arguments, you know, his initial video, all the arguments that came along, the comments, his response, I can kind of sit there and I can agree – yes, question everything. Do I really need this? Do I really need to use this? You know, but I think, like you said, it was just too short, and I think it was the wrong approach.
Yeah.
And with that comes my argument that I made to him when I engaged with him on Twitter was that my fear with this was because of his position as a teacher and because of the levels of experience that people are coming to him with. And that are subscribing to his videos with, that they may see this and follow it as gospel, you know, that with this. And I say this because I did firsthand, you know, when I was following along. And people do. I mean, I know they definitely do in PHP community. I'm not part of any other real developer community, so I'm not sure. But with every new trend, there's a huge bandwagon follow, right? We had, you know, everything was a command. We had, you know, TDD, you know, hit, which TDD, you know, it's good. It has its place. But then we had domain-driven development, you know, DDD come along. And it was everything, you know, every tool, every pattern, everything you learned that started making its wave. It was like a wave going through the community. And then all of a sudden, every developer, you know, now that they had a hammer, they started seeing nails, you know. And so my fear was with this video and less experienced developers seeing such a short video without that further explanation, that they would start thinking, well, I don't need this feature, or I shouldn't use this feature, and that it would come back to bite them, that they would be then developing bad practices that they would have to later break. Because honestly, if I had, as a senior developer, as someone who interviews developers and reviews their code quite often, if I saw code like that come along my desk, they wouldn't even get a second look.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But if you're writing a small website, a small app, you know, your side project, you know, do whatever you want with it. Don't use return types. Don't do whatever. If you're just hacking your way through it, I think there's many ways to do it. Like Jeffy said, you can do however you want. You just have to pick. I think you have to be aware of the tools use them when it makes makes sense. But I will agree with him. Question everything. Do I really need to use this?
Yeah.
And it's not just the examples he gave. I think it's everything. You know, do I need to use this package? Do I need to use this framework? Do I need to do this and that?
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I think the key here is just to refactor and question all your code as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
question everything.
Yeah.
Question Jeffrey Way.
Yeah. Question Jeffrey Way. Question every blog you read. I mean, I think the whole point of what, you know, a lot of what, yeah, like you said, a lot of developers take things as gospel. To me, I take them as, I don't know, as suggestions or an idea to move you forward in a different direction and to say, okay, well, that is actually very interesting. I would like to explore that. You know what I mean? And then decide, is it, does it work for you or does it make sense for you or for the app that you're writing or, you know, just hack away at some, you know, simple little script on the weekend or on an evening and say, you know, does this make sense? Should I bring this into what I'm, you know, what I do on a daily basis? Or, and I don't think enough developers do that. Like you said, a lot of them just say, okay, you know, Jeffrey said this or Taylor said this or, you know, whoever, you know, said this. And that means that's the way it's got to be. But, you know, if you actually, I've actually watched a, you know, or listened to a couple of podcasts, you know, where, and I wish I had examples because you know, I should probably write these down. But you know, like you said, there was this one time where yeah, TDD and especially behavior driven development was like the huge thing. I don't think I see anybody really doing any behavior driven development in PHP anymore. Not to say that they don't. I don't see it a lot. It's not talked about as much. But what I do see is that there's trends. I mean, you know, back in Laravel 4.2 days, I mean, there were all kinds of classes to help solve problems. I think, you know, the command bus was a popular pattern, repositories. I mean, everybody swore by them. You know, there was just all these things, right? And then, and now, you know, a lot of Laravel developers don't even use them. So it's like, you know, and then they're telling people not to use them anymore, right? So there were these really popular things and you weren't caught writing PHP code without without a repository in there somewhere, right? So, I, you know, things change and, you know, your code changes. And so I think if you continue to improve your code by refactoring, and again, like Jeffrey said, question everything. Do I actually still need this anymore? No. Okay, let's get rid of it. Let's clean it up. There's actually a better way to do this. It's part of growth. I mean, you know, I look at my code from 3 months ago and I see how much I've improved every month, every couple of weeks, you know, you improve all the time. So what you thought 2 years ago was the best thing, you know, you're laughing at yourself, you know, later on. So you're like, I hope nobody sees that, you know. If you have some, you know, I have some projects where I'm like, yeah, please don't judge me by this code. I know so much
exactly.
More now. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So it's talking about the return types. Mm-hmm. I want to kind of bring some that we're starting a very interesting discussion at work at Help Scout. It's going to come up in our next guild meeting, but I kind of wanted to bring it up here because it's interesting to me. So with, I guess with the introduction of scalar type hints, return types, all of that. Is there a place anymore for doc blocks? You know, at least there is, I guess, if you explain something. But if it's just set up there to tell you what type something is, mm-hmm. or what something returns for your IDE, does it really make sense to have them anymore?
You want my opinion? I like them. And I like them visually. I feel like it's very easy to separate. Like when I go into a class and it has no doc blocks, it's like all I see is code, right? Whereas a doc block kind of separates things from you. And, you know, in your IDE editor, you know, mine's like, you know, the doc blocks are like a green color. And so I can sit there and just very easily, it's more for readability for me. And then also it tells me that whoever developed that class actually went through and said, even if, you know, you know, you're going to write some sort of description at the top of a doc block to say, well, this is what this method does. So to me, you know, it's the developer actually saying, this is what this does and this is why it's here. So it's more of a, I don't know, I feel like it feels like it's completed when it's all there. I don't know. That's just me. So I don't think.
I agree. I like having it there. As you're right, it does break up the code. It does make it. Thinking about it now that you pointed it out, it does make it more readable. Because right, you have this big chunk of code, but just especially with how PHP Storm highlights it for me, like you're right, it's that green color, and it's just it takes a huge class or a huge whatever, and it breaks it into blocks. Readable chunks that I can scan.
Exactly.
I scroll down, I scan. I will go ahead and admit that I don't like writing. So all of my doc blocks are generated, right? I let PHP Storm do that for me. I don't like writing descriptions if I can help it in the doc blocks.
Yeah.
You know, because back, you know, there, I think it's a convention where you have like a one liner description or you say what it is and then you have like a couple of sentences, right? But for me, I like to make sure it. I feel like if I have to do that a lot, then I'm not writing appropriate code. I think the method name. I don't mind long method names. I think the method name should be self-descriptive. I think the code inside of the method should have properly named variable names, method calls, maybe even inline comments, you know, here and there, whatever. But as a whole, I should be able to look at that block of code, scan it, and understand it without the need of an explanation.
You know, I write the explanations, but I guess for me, you know, at a personal level, to me, it's like I'm looking at this method. I'm saying, what does it do? And if I can't write a quick one liner, to me, it's just it helps me to think through my code. And, you know, I say, OK, this thing does this. And there's a lot of times where it's a good opportunity to say, well, yeah, this does way too much. If I'm writing three lines to explain this one method, then that means this method is actually too large. So it's just part of my process. And I think it's different for everybody. But I like to do that. Even there's sometimes that I'm writing a lot of classes at the same time. I'm going back and forth, adding methods, removing methods, you know, just going, you know, and at the very end, I go through all my classes and I make sure the doc blocks are all there. I make sure that I've written a one liner for everything. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone and done that, you know, it's a slow process. I mean, you know, it takes some time, but the fact that I've gone through and I went back to every method and said, you know, what is this? What does it do? Do I remember what it does? You know, there's a lot of times where I'm like, oh, I don't even need this anymore. Or actually I see, yeah, I actually put this somewhere else. Let me get rid of this or let me, you know what I mean? It just, it helps you. To me, that process helps me clean up my code. So I like them there. I like doing descriptions. And it kind of bothers me when I see code with doc blocks and no descriptions. That's my.
And
my,
this is why we don't work together anymore, ladies and gentlemen.
I know, that's right.
So you basically you follow comment driven development. So you're CDD.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess OCDDD.
I guess it's a little OCD. I mean, you know, it really is. But I like it. It works. It's made me a better coder. So
that's good. Yeah. So what about and this is something that again, I'm kind of just bringing things up that I experienced where they work, right? I guess this is where we get ideas from. I need to make sure to bring this up to work because apparently I'm one of the few who don't do this. What do you think about package level or meaning class level doc blocks comments explaining the purpose of a class?
I do not do those. You know, those never really made sense to me when you do the app package and you're like, you know, all right. You know, I guess it would make sense sometimes. I think there are some classes that probably could use an explanation, maybe. But I don't know. I've never, you know, even in code, so let's say you're using a package and you're going through that code just to figure out, you know, you're like, oh, this isn't quite working for me. Okay, time to dig through the package code. You know, I've never had a problem understanding what a class does, you know, by looking at the methods and saying, okay, this goes in here. Okay, this makes sense. You know what I mean? It's like I've never had that problem. So I guess it could work. You know, I guess my opinion, it'd be nice to actually do it just because if you can't write a method, if you can't write a description for your class, then maybe that class isn't a good class. So, you know, I don't know.
right.
I say no. I don't like
you say
it.
No.
I don't like
so it. As a team, apparently we say yes. And I got politely asked to add a comment to one of my classes recently. It was a very polite way of saying, can you add a comment here to explain what the heck this class does? And to be fair, it's on a project which I've been working on with one other developer on and off together for, you know, off on our own little island for a few months. And so people the rest of the team, they aren't aware of the project's particulars, of the requirements, of the specifications of it. And so in that sense, it kind of does make sense to go back and be like, why did you choose this? Because I actually put a lot of thought and explanation into pull requests when I submit a pull request with a new whatever, and I'll explain what this class does, I'll do whatever. But those get lost after they're merged, right? So if you go back and you try to look at that, it's gone, you know. And so then you start having to follow the rabbit hole of what does this do? Why is it called here? You know, and I do try to make my classes very well named. I like to try and namespace them and organize them, you know, in a logical manner. You know, I like everything to be self-documented, as I mentioned, but in this particular instance, I could see that. And I think as a team, we decided, which I may have missed out on, that that's what we want to do. But I haven't ever done that. I've always not liked class level. I don't know. Maybe for me, it's at the class level, it was clutter, right? Like I wanted to get down. I was in too much of a hurry, right? I wanted to get down into the guts of the class. I didn't want to sit, you know, scroll down past all these comments, right? I like how all the users are grouped under.
Like, every time I've ever seen them used, I mean, it's like this, I don't know, it's like a short story, right? I mean, it takes like 100 lines to get to code, and it, and then I'll see some where they're like throwing every method that's in the class up there, and I'm like, oh, you know, I don't know. I guess if you're, you know, I'm using PHP Storm. It's very easy for me to, you know, look through the class and to find anything. And if I'm digging through code, you know, command click and you're where you need to be in the next, you know, in that path through, you know, trying to figure out what it is that you're looking for. So I don't know. I think, I don't know. I'm cool with it. I mean, you know, if my boss came to me tomorrow and said, you know what, we're going to start commenting all of our classes, I'd be like, all right, let's do it. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
For shits and giggles, I think one episode we should go back and we should look at some of the projects we worked on together. We should laugh at each other's styles, laugh at the knowledge that we thought we had, and then kind of laugh at the fact that we're so different, but we were working on a project together.
So okay, yeah, that sounds good. So what I'll do is I'll pick out some of your code that you won't know what it is. So I'll send it over to you right before the show. And you'll have to look at it and tell us about it. You know what? Maybe you should tell us what it does.
There we go. That's what we'll do. Right. We should pick a piece of each other's, and we'll paste it up in the show notes, and the other one will have to describe what it is. What we should actually do is we should pick a piece randomly, and then each of us read it and try to guess who wrote it.
That might okay. Let's do both. So we'll pick
a piece.
Yeah, we'll see that. That'd be fun.
So I've got one more topic.
Okay.
That I at least want to hit, short one, but you know, we've got plenty of time if you want to hit something else as well. But we've obviously talked visual debt, we've led into doc blocks and type hints and all of the language features. So with PHP 7 came, you know, these new features that PHP being a weak typed language, right? It's very forgiving, but it did give us the ability to declare strict types, meaning that things would error and fail. If you tried to pass a string instance of an integer, right, or something like that,
right.
And so my question to you is: too strict or not too strict? What do you do? Do you declare that statement at the top of your PHP file, or do you just let it be weak typed throughout the system?
I don't think I've ever used strict type. So,
that was a short answer.
Yeah. unless it's been defaulted in like the PHP INI file, can you set that? Oh, you talking about error strict?
Well, you can set it. I think by default it is off.
Yeah,
so you can set it to on.
You know, I don't think I've ever set it on.
Yeah.
So that was that's it.
I think I misunderstood what it actually did when I started using it. So the last few months I've been working on new code, and as a company, maybe just 3-4 months ago, we got PHP 7 at Help Scout. And so we all started trying to implement it, right? But it's hard habit to pick up of using these new features. We've done a good job now. I've done a good job now, but before that, you know, we'd have to remind each other a lot. Like, hey, I'd add return types here and there. And then all of a sudden I remembered this statement, the strict types. And so I started throwing it at the top of my files. And for the new code, it was no problem, you know, because I'm the one writing this whole new file, this whole new class. Strict types are only analyzed on that file that was declared. And so it was no problem. But then our CTO was reviewing my code, and we got into this question of like, well, do we really need to start doing that system-wide? And he brought up the point that a lot of our code is so legacy, and a lot of the packages that we have are legacy, that we do have string instances of, you know, ints and IDs being passed around here and there. We can't ever be sure of what those other pieces are doing. You know, we can't have control. But then that led us down this thought process of this path of, well, you know, well, if we don't declare strict type, what's the point of using like type hints, right? And so he actually started doing some testing, and we started reading the RFCs again. And it actually turns out, because of the magic of PHP being dynamically typed or whatever, is if you use those type hints, it'll actually convert it. So if you say that if you type hint and don't declare strict, so if you let it be, you know, dynamic, and you say, yeah, this parameter, this ID coming into my method is going to be an int, but it's a string. If it can be converted to a string, as if you were to cache it yourself, PHP will do that for you. So then it's been transformed after it's been passed to your method.
Oh, yeah. I think I read about this. Okay, now you're making sense. Okay. Right. So if it was an int and a string could be converted to an int, it would just automatically convert it, versus if you declare strict types, then it's going to fail saying that it's a string. Is that right?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
I actually kind of like that. I prefer that coming from I think that was a smart decision they did. You know, they gave us the best of both worlds. And if you want to be strict throughout, you can. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. PHP being magical sometimes is a benefit.
Actually, yeah. Okay, so I didn't know what you were talking about at the beginning of this, but now this makes sense. So I would actually, I probably wouldn't put it everywhere, but I definitely, you know, if you were doing math or reporting or, you know what I mean, just working with a lot of numbers, and I could see it being very useful for that.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Just forcing somebody to say this needs to be what it's supposed to be before it even gets here.
Yeah. 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 Then you don't have to do any check. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what the next version, I believe it's the next version of Laravel. That's coming out. I'm not sure. I can't remember what the next version number is. Is it 5.5?
I think it is 5.5, yeah.
I think they're going to make the minimum requirement PHP 7 or 7.1 or whatever. They're going to up it, I think, maybe possibly to that. And so I'm curious to see if with that come a lot of the default features of return types, type in, stuff like that, being used without the Laravel framework. I think it's great, right? Because 7, honestly, 7... I think it's active. I think it goes into security only maintenance mode in December. So 7.1 has a little bit longer shelf life. 7.2 scheduled out at the end of this year. So I think, you know, even at this point, if you're somebody who's going to try and maintain this code, you know, bumping the number up to the most current version, I think that's totally acceptable in my book.
Isn't 5.6, isn't it end of life already?
It is. It was about a month and a half ago.
Okay. All right. I thought I read that somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, technically, I don't think there should be any frameworks. I mean, if it's end of life, then, yeah, frameworks should start avoiding, not avoiding, but I think, you know, a lot of framework, I think it's hard, like, if you're, you know, building a framework, then you have to, you know, just support such a wide range of, you know, PHP versions, especially like 5.6 to 7 was such a huge difference that, you know, I could see it being kind of painful saying, oh, I can't use the new stuff as long as 5.6 is still supported. So, yeah, end of life and you're like, see ya.
You know, I think I have my my arguments against and my dislikes against BDFLs, right? Benevolent Dictators for Life. as and one of them being self-described BDFL is Taylor Otwell. But this single guy, I'm going to say something that I'm going to contradict myself, but the single guy is in charge of the fate of Laravel.
Yeah.
Right. And so he does what he wants. I mean, he takes inputs. He takes pull requests. He does have, I believe, another person or a couple of people that help maintain and handle the issue tracking and the pull requests on GitHub. So it's not just him, but the direction of it is driven by him. And while sometimes you may not agree with it, you know, it is on the leading edge of a lot of things because of that. Because we can say, you know, we're going to support this old version for a certain period of time, but if you want to keep upgrading and moving forward and you want our support, you got to move forward with us, right? Like, yeah. The language is moving forward. The technology is moving forward. We're all pushing forward and trying to grow. We're not going to stagnate and continue to hold ourselves back. And I think that's great, you know, but there are other organizations that don't, and other frameworks or systems that don't follow that mentality, such as, WordPress, right? I mean, they're stuck on old. I can't remember what their minimum is. I think it's 5.2. Is that what?
Probably.
I can't.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're because they are so widespread and so widely adopted, they have to maintain this backwards compatibility. And because, in my opinion, working with WordPress is in a lot of people's opinions, developing for it sucks. You know, their API and it, like the way it's, everything's functional. Like, I mean, it's a great system, but I would love to see it be rewritten, or at least get a facelift, become more modern. Under the hood, but it will never happen, I don't think, right? Because of the adoption and the backwards compatibility. Much like Microsoft, you know, I wish they could just drop everything and write a modern version of Windows.
You know, well, no, you know, you're saying, like, I don't know, I have a special place in my heart for WordPress, but even though I haven't used WordPress in years, I think it's a good and a bad thing, right? I mean, WordPress is or has been that entry level for a lot of developers. It's what got me in the business, right? It's what got me to being, you know, where I am today. So I owe a lot to WordPress. And I think if WordPress was rewritten, you know, to use namespacing and it was all class based and interface based and all that stuff, you would lose a lot. They would lose a lot of their community just because it takes time to get to that point. First, you got to understand functions, right? Most people going into WordPress, they start with like HTML and, you know, CSS and some really terrible JavaScript, right? That's me. That's the way I was. You know, and then you start digging into PHP and you start learning it, right? You know, I would assume that if, yeah, you jumped into, you know, something like that, you know, it'd probably be really tough for people coming in, you know. So I think that's one of the benefits of WordPress is like the learning curve is, you know, the bar is low. And yeah, it's stuck on an old version of PHP, but, you know, WordPress actually runs surprisingly well considering, you know, how old its, you know, its code is, right? So I don't know. If you want something new, you want something fresh, you know, don't start with WordPress. I think, you know, most developers who understand that stuff would probably never touch WordPress. And what you're talking about as far as, you know, the BDFL, I'm glad, you know, I don't like it, but I think it's great. Same as you, like, because, you know, if CodeIgniter, you know, CodeIgniter might still be around if they took that approach of saying, okay, you know, let's keep moving forward. You know, CodeIgniter got stagnant and it lost its place.
CodeIgniter is still around, actually.
Is it?
It is. So, God, the company that made CodeIgniter.
Express.
Express Engine.
Yeah.
And, right, it was a... All right, CodeIgniter, hold on. I can't remember the name of the company that used to have it. Let's see. Ellis Lab. So that was was used to make that. But yeah, it's still around. It actually got sold off, or not sold off, but the source code, like they didn't maintain it anymore. They got some work done to 3.0, and I guess they decided they didn't want it anymore. So now it's actually being maintained and taken care of by a university in
British Columbia Institute of Technology.
That's it, British Columbia in Canada. I was just going to generically say Canada. So yeah, they are now the stewards of that framework. But you're right, because of the industries that used it, and because I guess it was big in the education sector and all these whatever. But and then being an educational system, they're very slow to move the versions ahead, despite the community. And that's why you're right. You're right. You did see a lot of community members jumping ship and going to Laravel from that, because Laravel came along and it was, I mean, it propelled my career. I got my career in PHP starting out. You got yours in WordPress. I got mine with CodeIgniter. That was what helped me understand object-oriented programming and do a lot of things. But right, I progressed to where I started almost writing my own frameworks to fit my projects, because CodeIgniter no longer did it for me. And so when Laravel came along, it was like, here's this new thing that propelled my career forward. I mean, that really was for me from when I moved from doing small one-off pieces for clients and marketing work and websites to doing application development, because we did have an application or framework that allowed you to structure and write better code, right? You know, so that was really the big jump for me. And having those types of leaps and bounds, I think, is good for the community and good for the framework itself.
So let me ask you a question here. So the good thing about Laravel is it's always moving forward. I mean, you know, from 4.2 to 5, it was huge, right? You know, we probably see when it eventually becomes from 5 to 6, probably going to see huge changes. So, and you know, I see a lot of coders that are like, oh, new version of Laravel, drop my old code, you know, either rewrite it in the new version or, you know, upgrade it or, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I don't know. I was stuck on 4.2 for such a long time. You know, I'm just now getting into 5.4, right? And, you know, what's your opinion on that? I mean, should you stick with what you have because it makes sense? You wrote all this code for it, and then one, it's like, should you continue to just every time a new version comes out, there's new ways of doing things. You know, what was good a year ago, 2 years ago is not the best way to write stuff now. I mean, should you rewrite your app every 2 years or so, or, you know?
Well, that's a good question. We'll try and keep it short. Maybe we can discuss this more in depth next time, but at least in my opinion is, I don't think should you rewrite your app is a good code, whatever, that all of that stuff that's changing. I don't think that that's independent from the framework. The framework changes, the ideology behind it changes, the implementations can change and evolve, and it brings along a lot of new things, a lot of improvement and better tools, but it's just a tool, right? And so the application you're building on top of this framework, should you rewrite that as you learn more? Yes. Should you rewrite it in a new framework? No, not necessarily. And I think a lot of people, it depends on the application, right? So if you're building just your one-off website or your whatever, like, I mean, I'm guilty. Upstate PHP was written on different ones, and stuff that I've done for myself, you know, every time a new Laravel would come out, I'd rewrite it just because I wanted to play. But that's okay. Yeah. Yeah. If you're actually writing anything that's making money, you have an obligation to stick with what works. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can try and move it forward, but if you have anybody to answer to, like investors or your customers or anything like that, I don't think you have the time to continue to move it over and migrate, right? You're just constantly at that point, you're constantly playing catch up to the new tool.
I agree.
You're not actually innovating in your application anymore. And so I think it just depends on what you're writing, what you're doing, and who you answer to, and really where your priorities lie. But no, upgrading it with every version that comes out, no, I think that's, in my experience, inappropriate. But I'll admit that I do it a lot, but not for the big stuff that, that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I was on 4.2 for so long. It's just like, it just didn't make sense. Like, you know, but then again, I don't know. Yeah, we could definitely talk about this more in depth. I think this would be a good topic for another episode. So we'll leave it at that. Yeah.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, that's all we got for the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks, everybody. We'll try and do one a lot sooner. But thanks for listening. Thanks for coming out again.